Welcome into the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, joined by Travis Ryer. You can get some great content of all sorts on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Be sure to check it out. Click that like button. Click that subscribe button. Travis brings all kinds of good stuff to you from that Ryer on YouTube channel. Here on Talking Tide, of course, on the Sunday Nighter, we're going to be breaking down Alabama's big victory over Eastern Illinois, final regular season home game for Alabama. Also touch on some games around the SEC. Hit on Alabama basketball briefly before we get out of here as well, Travis. But, of course, we'll start with Eastern Illinois, an FCS team that had no business on the field. We knew it was going to happen. Alabama handles business 56-0, 14 points in each quarter, every touchdown on the ground. The shellacking that we kind of knew it would be.
The running game's all better now, Chase, right? I'm sure you're buying that. Running game's fixed. 8 rushing touchdowns, around 270 rushing yards. Everything is good with that Alabama run game.
I felt bad for EIU too, Travis, just because it was such a mash unit. I mean, not only did they get beat 56-0, but it seemed like there were trainers getting an awful lot of exercise running onto the field and helping guys off. I mean, that was a physical beatdown on top of a scoreboard beatdown.
Yeah, I know the check's good, but it would have to be hazard pay for me if I was one of those teams, because it's already a long season, right? Just at the FCS level, it's been a long season. We talk about teams within the SEC that aren't necessarily built for the long season in the SEC. You got an FCS team that goes through it that obviously is talent challenged. And then you get an Alabama in your 11th game. And that's rough, man. They earn every bit of that check, teams like Eastern Illinois. And as you said, I know lost some other guys as that game moved on.
And I can only presume that because it's an FCS and not an FBS lightweight, that's why the check's smaller. They didn't get a million plus like you see with a lot of they got 560K to come to Tuscaloosa. It'll go a long way at that school, I'm sure.
That's why they like those matchups too. There's value, you know. The ticket prices don't change all that much. You notice that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's premium games. I get that. But you still pay a pretty good number to get in for a matchup like that. It's friends and family, a lot of it. And that's why I liked what I saw from Kalen DeBoer, too. I mean, he was taking precautionary steps just in terms of who played in the game to start with. The Josh Cuevas news, obviously, was more significant than that. But played a ton of walk-ons, man. That was huge for a lot of those guys, I'm sure. And also huge, I talked about it after the game, for their families and just to have those moments. And Kalen's a guy, I mean, he starts running walk-ons out there in the third quarter, you know. So it was fun to see some of that too.
Yeah, from an injury standpoint, let's go ahead and hit on that, because obviously injuries is one of the only things that can be gleaned out of a game like this. On the weeknight podcast leading up to this game, we kind of nailed it with the Brailsford/Rousseau decision, right? We were thinking Brailsford probably best to sit him, Rousseau maybe best to let him out there and get loose a little bit. That's exactly what happened. Brailsford sat, and Rousseau got not even 10 snaps, I don't think, but back on the field just to see how it felt, see what he could do.
Yeah, that was good. We agreed on that, as you said. I also like that, look, you know, you hope that Brailsford's good to go in some form or fashion against Auburn. But if he isn't, you were able to get Geno Vandermark a lot of work at that center position. Unfortunately, we saw Joseph Iannotta go down with an injury in the game. Right. So that could complicate some things for you there at the center position. So Geno Vandermark has a lot of value going into this matchup with Auburn. Again, hoping and anticipating that Brailsford can go. But if he can't, to have a veteran guy like Vandermark and then to be able to get him game action like you did the week before Auburn, I think there was some good about that.
No doubt. It's going to be big for Alabama if they can get Brailsford back. walked into the stadium in the suit with a bit of a limp, which you know, you hate to project what that might mean for anybody after 7 days, but it certainly it was clear he's still dealing with something, and not good, obviously, because he's a key part of that offensive line. I think he's been the best performer on that OL for the season. So be huge down there, especially from a communication standpoint at Auburn, all the noise you get down there, Brailsford's experience, you know, his rapport with Ty Simpson, all those things kind of come into play a little bit more on the road. Big for Alabama if they can get him back. And you mentioned the Quavis injury. That was really the biggest news, and he didn't even play a down. He was obviously injured earlier in the week, missed the EIU game. Doesn't sound good for Auburn either, Travis. Mm-mm. So that's going to be a serious blow for Ty Simpson, because Quavis has been a security blanket for sure for Ty Simpson, but even more than that, a playmaker too.
He has. And kind of circling back to Brailsford real quick, you think about how Brailsford is as good as he is. Physically, it's his feet, right? I mean,
right.
And that's what he's dealing with right now. So that's what you worry about too. He's not a 325-pound guy. So how he really gets the job done as well as he does is with his feet and with his agility and his technique. So even if he's able to go, but he's not 100%, you worry about that. And Quavis is all those things that you mentioned. And, you know, he also brings an edge in the way he plays. He doesn't turn down smoke at any point. I'm not going to tell you he is Michael Williams as a blocker or some of the other tight ends that we've seen in the past for Alabama, or even Robbie Oots from last year, or CJ Dupree, but he's good, and he's good enough in that area. And he helps them replace what they don't get in the run game. You know, if you don't have backs that are churning up the numbers, either as rushers and or receivers, you better have a tight end that can replace some of those yards that you're not getting. That's what he gives them. Third down, you know, you can go to him, as you talked about, as sort of a reliable, comforting option for Ty Simpson. I kind of liked that about Saturday's game, that Ty didn't have all of his guys out there. Now, you don't want Josh Quavis out for an extended period. That's something you don't want. But no Jeremy Bernard. You know, you kind of made Ty go to some other guys. I thought Isaiah Horton early in the game, you know, they were able to hit some things. But yeah, I mean, there's problems if you don't have Josh Quavis against Auburn. I did like Marshall Pritchett, the young tight end. I thought he did some good things, Chase.
Right. He did do some good things. Kalen DeBoer singled him out in the press conference. He likes his future pretty clearly. I think it's going to be interesting to see who, along with Caleb Edwards, is not only getting snaps and reps against Auburn, but anybody else going to get targeted? I mean, were they legit prepping Pritchett for some targets in the Iron Bowl? Or was that more kind of, you know, this is the situation for EIU? I don't know. Look, Grubb's going to put more than one tight end on the field. We know that. We see plenty of that. Caleb Edwards is going to be one of them. What does the rest of that mix look like? It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, Jay Lindsey, a guy that we've seen a good bit of, looked like he was sort of that next guy up. Especially because Danny Lewis, with the injury issue he's had throughout the season, that's sort of that bulk guy, you know, that you would like to have in line in a lot of situations. I think that they can't change who they are at this point. You know, if Josh Quavis can't go, they've got to look to Caleb Edwards and some other guys and say, you guys have just got to step it up. And the good news part of it is we are in the 12th game of the season, and Caleb Edwards has been a factor every week. So he's got a lot of reps. There's been a serious investment made in him. The role could be a little bit different as the primary guy in Quavis's sort of shoes. But I think that's kind of what you got to go with. And I agree on Marshall Pritchett. I think that some of what we saw Saturday might be a ramping up of him here late to make him a viable option, especially in the passing game against this Auburn defense.
You mentioned Ty Simpson. Let's just stick with his performance. Not the best outing for Ty Simpson. Had a couple picks. the first pick obviously was a bad throw. The second pick, look, that was basically a Hail Mary at the end of the half. Kalen DeBoer even said, look, I'd rather him sling it into the end zone, into traffic in a situation like that than just check it down. So I don't fault Simpson for the pick at the end of the half, certainly, but first one didn't look good. And lest we forget, he had another throw with about a minute to go in the first half that should have been picked. So really, he darn near had 3.5.
He did. And I agree wholeheartedly on the one just before the half or at the half. You know, that's as Kalen said, more of a positive. I guess as much as anything, you just worry about the energy with Ty Simpson right now. It just doesn't feel like there's a lot of juice coming from him, and it's a long season. And he's been under the gun every week because this is such a quarterback-centric offense, and there's so much put on the quarterback and the passing game. It's maybe one of those byproducts of not having a consistent or even decent run game that has shown up in terms of how it's maybe impacting Ty Simpson this late in the season, because it's all been on him for the most part. So I think that had something to do, we didn't talk about this yet, with Ryan Grubb being down on the sideline Saturday too, you know, just trying to make sure he understands exactly where Ty's at, maybe try to do some things down there from down there that you can't do from the box to make in game a little bit easier on Ty, maybe take some things off of him. But it was kind of that continuation of concerning play from Ty Simpson that you don't want to have before you go on the road this week for an Iron Bowl.
When Kalen Grubb obviously will be asked about that Monday morning, no question. When DeBoer was asked about it in the post game presser, and I'll apologize to our listeners and viewers for my voice. It's woke up this morning and the voice had kind of left me a little bit. It's starting to come back now, but not quite like I'd like. But when DeBoer was asked about it, he dropped in a little, something to the effect of, you know, we'll see moving forward on that decision to put Grubb on the sideline.
Yeah.
Clearly to me, an indication that we might turn around and see Grubb on the sideline all over again at Auburn. I don't think you do that against EIU for fun, right? You do it against EIU to see if you want to turn around and do it again against Auburn. So it was a test balloon, right? To see if they think they might be better off like that on the sideline on the plains.
Yeah, and you could say, well, you go into a game like that thinking you might play at least three quarterbacks, so maybe it's beneficial from that standpoint. But Nick Sheridan's down there, right? Mm-hmm. So, that doesn't really add up from that perspective. It will be fascinating to see exactly where Ryan Grubb is on Saturday night in terms of his location. You combine this with the Quavis injury. None of this is coming at a good time. But I think we've seen some things here in the last little bit, including, I know I was being pretty sarcastic at the open of the show about the run game. And here we have Chris Glenn chiming in here in the show chat. We appreciate each and every one of you for doing that as we're live on a Sunday night. Chris is asking, how can the Alabama run game be effective against Auburn? Do we see some more quarterback design runs? If we are in third and long, it will be a long day for the offense. I liked what I saw from Kevin Riley too. I think part of the problem too is Jam Miller and Daniel Hill are both solid backs, but they don't complement each other all that differently or all that well, right? And Kevin Riley isn't exactly Kenyon Drake, but he does bring something a little bit different, it feels right. like, than because there's still, and I know there's been a lot made of, well, it's not all on the offensive line. I get all that, and I understand that. But it still seems like there's a lot of trash at the line of scrimmage a lot of times. And some of that you just can't always account for. So you better have a back that can account for some of that and sort of do some things to create 4 or 5 yard runs. I think Kevin Riley right now might be their best option to do that if they look to expand this thing or maybe include him more in the run game against Auburn. We'll talk more about that later in the week, I'm sure.
Yeah, Kevin Riley can make people miss better than Miller or Hill. I don't think there's any question. Miller's a guy who doesn't break a lot of tackles, but he will carry contact forward for a couple more yards. He's a powerful guy. Hill, I think, is a little bit more of a tackle breaker, although he will too. If you put a solo tackle on Daniel Hill, you bet on Daniel Hill to get another yard or two out of it. And Riley is much more of a complimentary make you miss guy. So I definitely hear you there. As far as the holes go, yeah, a lot of trash and traffic in the box with the run game. You saw some of it even against EIU. And too much of that traffic's on the ground. And too much of that traffic on the ground is Alabama guys on the ground.
Yeah,
and it ends up being a situation where even if the back has a little bit of a crease, there's knees and legs and elbows and feet all over the place. That you can't step through all that sometimes.
Yeah, there's clutter, whether it's the other, the defense or even Alabama. And you go back to the Florida State game and see that, you know, at times.
Right.
I just feel like at this point, I know they still want to offer up some of those gap runs and they want to pull people and, you know, do some of that stuff. I still think at this point they are a zone duo type of run game. And if it's first and 10 and you run it, just try to get to second and 7, second and 6, you know, and be good with that. More direct runs, you know, those type of things. I just haven't seen enough good stuff when they pull people really for it to be a big part of what they do. And I don't think they can do that against Auburn. I don't think that'll work that well for them. I think that type of stuff will probably get blown up. So, you know, have some effectiveness in the zone game and the duo runs, and then try to go play action off of that. I would think, you know, more of this later in the week. Yeah, they're going to continue to see cover two, cover three shell on the back end because they're not a threat to run the football really against it. So why would you commit or play the run a certain way that could expose you on the back end? Yeah, those deep crossing routes are been bread and butter for Ty Simpson, but the interception Saturday, the one interception came on one of those deep crossers. So you've got a lot of tape out there too, in terms of where you feel like you got to go with it. And, you know, I think that's still going to be a big part of what they do against Auburn, but you got to have more than one song to make the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, is what I'm saying. And right now they're feeling a little bit like a one hit wonder in some ways. And I think Grubb does a good job of trying to scheme around all this stuff. But the later it goes, and as the stakes go up and the defenses get better and better, it gets harder and harder to sustain.
Auburn's got a phenomenal defense, especially up front. So yeah, no question. It's going to be tough sledding up there. I haven't seen a lot of respect all season for the Simpson keeper on that zone read option. Usually when Simpson pulls the ball and tries to get something on his own outside on that zone read, there's usually room out there for him, but you can't lean on that. You don't want to lean on that too much with your quarterback either.
Damn it. Alan beat me. Chase out here sounding like Peter Brady. I was about to go with that one. Time for a change.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to be an old head to remember that from the Brady Bunch.
That's right.
But I do believe though, and I felt this way seeing some of it. We saw Ty keep off of zone read against EIU on Saturday. I think we're at that point. If you're going to incorporate more of the design runs or kind of lean on Ty more to keep in some situations where he's got the read, that's what you got to do. It's championship time now. I mean, you're not protecting anybody. You're not worried about hits on your quarterback or any of that. You worry about it. But in terms of what you got to do to get the job done, and then if you don't have one of your primary options in Josh Cuevas this week, you got to cover for all of that with something. And I do think I think Ty's an effective runner as long as Ty remembers that he's not a make everybody miss guy. Where Ty gets in trouble is he starts trying to fake out three or four guys. You know, just go get 6-7 yards and step out of bounds. You don't have to stay in and try to, you know, do too much. So I do think it's that time of the proceedings where his legs could be more helpful than they've been to this point.
Season on the line, point well made on that. You gotta get out there and get that W right now. What about the kicking game, Travis? Obviously a little bit of a topic as well against Eastern Illinois. Connor Talty with a 28-yard miss, catches some boos from the fans. They didn't appreciate it. Ooh. You wonder where he is mentally right now, for sure. I think he's missed a couple from those short distances this year. Not what you want going down to Auburn, where you might be playing a tight game.
Well, the first half of the season, the silver lining for Connor Talty was, yeah, he was like 9 of 13, but he was 6 of 6 from inside 40. And in the last 3 weeks or so, that's changed. And right. He's not making kicks from inside 40. So you definitely worry about his headspace right now with what's left on the table. Notice that I think it's Alex Rozier, the snapper that Alabama went to in the second half, actually against Oklahoma, was in there still on Saturday. So they're tweaking some things in that operation. It's anybody's guess at this point. You know, I said this after the game too. It might be the best thing for Connor Talty that the game is in Auburn. As crazy as that sounds, as much of a house of horrors as that place has been, it might be good for Connor Talty not to kick in Bryant-Denny Stadium after the last three games. And we even heard this going back to the preseason about how he had struggles in the stadium and was in. Kalen said this after the game yesterday. He was great all week. And again, it's one thing to miss from 45 plus, but Ian, you can't miss from, you really can't miss from inside 30. I mean, that just can't happen.
Peter Nassaro, by the way, the backup, got run out there for a PAT and almost pushed that wide. I don't know if you caught that or not.
That was not confidence inspiring, the PAT for Pete. It was a PAT, but Pete was feeling it. And you understand that too. He's a young guy. That's a big moment for him. Those are the big moments for him when you don't get a lot of opportunities. But right. Yeah, and you don't want to put everything on one kick in a meaningless game, but you kind of do because it's a meaningless game and it appeared to have that effect on him. So I didn't take a lot of confidence from the other options that we saw on Saturday.
Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Moving on, I want to thank our listeners and viewers. Ask you to donate as well to Parker Covers Alabama, nonprofit 501c3, supporting wheelchaired residents of the state of Alabama. You can do so at parkercoversalabama.com, a new website that we've gotten launched here pretty much since the beginning of football season. We're looking forward to help and as many people as we can with that. Again, it's parkercoversalabama.com. Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Moving on, Travis, quick look around the SEC first, and then we'll touch on some basketball because it's a big week, big Thanksgiving week for Nate Oates and the basketball team. But to stay with football first, a lot of blowouts, a lot of these non-conference hammers that you typically see right before rivalry weekend, although Oklahoma and Missouri got together, ranked versus ranked there, 8 versus 22. Oklahoma does the job 17-6. That defense bottled up Ahmad Hardy. A week after he gets 300 yards, he didn't even get 60 against the Sooners. So big difference there. Oklahoma moves to 9-2 on the year and continues to be in pretty good shape for a spot in the college football playoff. Vanderbilt drums Kentucky 45-17. Vandy goes to 9-2. Texas over Arkansas in a shootout. How bad is that Arkansas defense to give up 52 to Texas? Arch Manning throws for almost 4 bills, Travis, against the Razorbacks.
They do. I mean, Arkansas still ended up scoring 37, I think it was, in that game. A couple of those were after the game had been decided. I understand that. But that's essentially why there's, as much as anything, a coach's head coach opening in Fayetteville. They have been horrific. Now, the offense didn't help Sam Pittman either, with some just absolutely catastrophic turnovers in games like Memphis before he was pushed out. But boy, I tell you, Oklahoma's in a great spot. Oklahoma is in a great spot, maybe as much as anything, because they don't have to worry about the SEC championship game. Right. You know, beat an LSU team that struggled to get past Western Kentucky on its home field last night. I understand Western Kentucky came in like 8-2, something like that still. 13-10 game that LSU really made interesting late with just a horrific fumble and return for the Hilltoppers for a touchdown. But there's some teams that are feeling really, really good about themselves right now where the CFP is concerning. Texas, and we'll talk about this later in the week too, Texas A&M, boy, there are just the win and get in just to Atlanta is pretty interesting, let alone the college football playoff.
Yeah, it's confirmed now. If Alabama does beat Auburn, they will be going to the SEC championship game. It's going to be a lot of chatter about the value of conference championship games. If Alabama goes in there with two L's hanging on by the fingernails to a college football playoff spot, Travis, it'll be a lot written and said about that. Some of that written by me, I'm sure. So still a big football game to go down on the plains before any of that comes to fruition. But it'll definitely be a huge topic. Tennessee wallops Florida 31-11 down in Gainesville, Travis. Couple hundred yards passing for Aguilar. Bishop runs for 116 for the Vols. And Florida now 3-8 going into that FSU game.
Yeah, that Florida-Tennessee game was worse, way worse than the score. I mean, it was brutal to see Florida get rolled like that at the once mighty Swamp. You know, I thought about 1979 for the old heads out there. Alabama rolled down there and rolled Florida 40-0 at Florida Field. And Florida was 0-10-1 in 1979. Even that halftime score, though, was only 17-0 Alabama.
Right.
Now, they continued to put it on the Gators and Charlie Pell after the break. But that was as bad a performance by Florida in a half as I've probably seen in my lifetime.
Oof. It's bad. It was a horrific shutout in the first half at home by a defense in Tennessee that's not that good.
No.
So,
some of these quarterback situations for these coaches that are going to take over these jobs are going to be really interesting. I mean, if you're taking that Florida job, if you're Lane Kiffin or someone else, is DJ Lagway your quarterback next year? I mean, are you going to roll with him? And it's not the only place either.
He's going to have to be reprogrammed wherever he plays football.
Well, we've said it before. He needs a healthy offseason badly, desperately, because he didn't have that this last time around. And his regression has been precipitous.
You buying, or speaking of coaching jobs, are you buying or selling Kane Womack as a possibility for that Arkansas gig?
I don't know what to think of the Arkansas gig anymore. I'm still I've said this before. Arkansas is the best, got to be the best 2-9 team in college football. I mean, because they're in every game, really. It was 24-20 in Austin yesterday. You know, it's not like they get blown out. I'm still not convinced that Bobby Petrino, when it's all said and done, wouldn't be their best option. You know, and hey, look, I'd love for a guy like Kane Womack to get that opportunity. But based on what I've seen at Arkansas to date with Bobby Petrino before that, faithful chopper ride, or unfaithful chopper ride, I guess it was. And then what he's done even as the offensive coordinator there the last couple of seasons, and he gets Arkansas. You better get Arkansas, man, and you better really understand what that job is, or it's just going to be more of the same.
You know, I'd love to be a fly on the wall for a Hunter Yurecek, Bobby Petrino postseason formal interview, and how that would sound from Bobby's end, right?
Well, and the egos on these guys are such that, you know, I wonder this about Kane Womack, if he is actually a viable candidate. If I'm Kane Womack and I want that job, I'd go in there and say, I'll keep Bobby. I'm a defensive guy. So Bobby stays on if he wants to.
Right. Right.
And I keep Bobby on the offensive side. I'm a defensive guy. And that might resonate, actually, with the people.
And it might resonate just fine with Bobby, too.
Bobby, if I'm Kane Womack and I talk to the Arkansas people, that would be my sell. I'm going to keep Bobby if he'll stay. And then, you know, everything else will be, you know, under my direction and all those things. And I'll still have a place with the offense, but yeah, that's that thing could go any number of ways. It sounds like right now in Arkansas.
Petrino's ego is more vested in, I think, quarterback production than it is.
It is
being the head guy somewhere.
He wants to call ball plays. Yeah.
With some coaching egos, the answer would be a sharp no, but I agree with you. I could maybe see Bobby doing that. All right, Alabama basketball, before we get out of here, Travis, they are headed to that Players Era Festival, big NIL windfall, taking on Gonzaga Monday night in Las Vegas. It'll be televised on TNT. Gonzaga comes in, I believe, ranked 13th, so the gauntlet continues for Nate Oates and his crew.
Yeah, not scared Nate, I like to call him, because it's really fascinating to watch. You know, and then even in the second game, right? UNLV, basically in a home game for UNLV out there, and then we'll see where it takes Alabama from there. But Gonzaga, top 15 team, you know, Clemson, that's a home game that Alabama should win, but still, you know, legitimate, almost rival at this point in Clemson basketball after the last couple of 3 years. Arizona, December the 13th in Birmingham. It just gets better and better from a scheduling perspective. And, you know, we've seen Alabama against Gonzaga here in recent years too. So some familiarity there between these two teams. Now players change so much, maybe not so much that way, but it'll be interesting to see if Alabama can carry over from that just really impressive road win, or what was basically a road win over Illinois and Chicago.
Absolutely. All right. That is going to do it for us here on the Talking Tide podcast. I want to thank our listeners and viewers. Programming note, what are we going to do with the midweek or with the holiday, Travis? We're going to go Wednesday. We're going to go Tuesday. What are you thinking?
Gosh, I'm good. I should
put you on the spot live here.
Yeah,
we'll do live.
I should be good. I should be good Wednesday. Maybe we ought to put it up for a vote here in the show chat. Wednesday, Tuesday, or Wednesday? I'm good Wednesday. Either one. Good Wednesday?
I'm good Wednesday. Could probably do it at the normal time on Wednesday. If we were to do it Tuesday, I could do it Tuesday, but we'd probably have to shuffle the time.
We'll do it Wednesday. We'll give those precious vocal cords some time to heal. You know, right?
Yes, I'll take it. I'll take it. I appreciate that. All right.
Hey, hit that Travis Ryer. Yep. Go ahead.
There we go. For Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread of the Tuscaloosa News, and we'll talk to you Wednesday here on Talking Tide.
There's a Wednesday right there.
There you go.